Welcome to Headlines. This is David Lichtenstein. This week, our topic will be Emuna, how to teach it to our children. At home, in schools, we're going to have with us the renowned Pesach, Rav Yitzchak Berkowitz. He's 16 years Mashgiach Ruchni in Eish HaTorah. He's the Rosh Koel of Koel Yerushalayim, one of the big halacha koels in Eretz Yisrael. He's the advisor to hundreds of Rabbanim. It's called a Rabbi's Rabbi. He's written Sfarim on Shmiras Haloshin, one of the renowned Paiskim in the world. I remember him from the Mir Yeshiva, an old Chava from here. We'll be talking to Rabbi David Saperman, the head of the Ani Mamon Foundation, whose mission is to go to schools and to teach them how to do a better job teaching Emunah and Betachon. I honestly, in Yeshiva, I can barely remember a single conversation about that topic, and it's an important topic. Not only at school, at home. You can listen to us Matzah Shabbos, 11 to 12 midnight, on WMCA 570 AM on the Nachum Siegel Network. Monday morning, 11 on NachumSiegel.com. You can always get us at headlinesbook.com, the audio or podcast section. Or if you're a Luddite, you can get us on our hotline at 732-806-8700. You can send any questions or comments to info@headlinesbook.com. I do want to put in a thanks coming to the Medusa and Yitzchak Flam, our engineer. Before we start, I always like to say a small thought on the time we're going through. And these, you may have Slicha, Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur. You know, many of us feel unprepared, most of all me, emotionally, psychologically, unfit for Yom HaDin. Right? Well, on the day when it says, right? The angels in heavens, even the fish in the sea tremble. How do we come? And being unprepared, since we're children, being unprepared is scary. Do you remember some of my deepest fears in school? Being called on by the Rebbe and we were unprepared to say that piece of Chumash or Siddur or Gemara. It's a fear we all have of being shamed or just, you know, we recently saw in a presidential debate what being unprepared could look like. They say over a story, I saw this years ago, that there was a fellow, he learned in yeshiva, and the Rebbe was a little bit hard of seeing, and he remembered one boy's name, we'll call him Leibowitz. So every day he used to call him to say Gemara. Well, you know, it's not so easy being the first to be called on unprepared, so one day this boy Leibowitz figured the Rebbe doesn't see so well, he would do something. So the Rebbe said, Leibowitz, could you read the Gemara today? He said, changed his voice a little bit, and he said, Leibowitz isn't here today. So the heart of sight Rebbe said, you know, Leibowitz says every day, let's give him a break. Why don't you say the Gemara today? But getting serious again, being unprepared is scary. And so how do we prepare for Yom HaDin? So I had a beautiful thought I would like to share with you. You know, in the davening of Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, we say something we don't say the rest of the year. We say Uvechein. Uvechein Yiskadesh, Uvechein Pachtecha, Uvechein Tein Kavid, Uvechein Tzadikim. So the Avudraham, and it's brought by the Rekeach as well as the Tur, an early Pirish, Mefarish of the Siddur. He was a Rishon, he lived in the 13th century. He says, you know where Uvechein comes from? It comes from Megillas Esther. Esther said, Uvechein avay el ha-melech asher lo kedas. So she said Uvechein, and we say Uvechein, which seems cute, but what's the oimek? What could a possible meaning of them be? And let me share with you a thought. You know, we as Jews, we have a different culture than everybody else. The first time we met after we were a nation, we were immersed in a foreign culture, was in the days of Esther, with our first Gullus. We went to Paras Umaday, and over there, a new word shows up in the Torah that did not appear practically before. It's called Das. Dvar HaMelech Dasai Magia, Kol Yoidei Das Vedin, Pashtegin Aksav Li Nasein Das. What does Das mean? The culture, the rules and the culture of society. And therefore, we don't have it in the Torah, suddenly in Esther, maybe 25 times it shows up. As Dasei HaMelech Einam Oisim, it says on Kol Yisrael. What does Das mean? And on us it says, As Dasei HaMelech Einam Oisim. We don't. And why is that? You know, our culture, I'll give you a few examples. The Gemara in Bava Metzia says, it says 36 times in the Torah, on Almana and Ager, Loisanan, not to treat those who are less than us, look down at them, hurt their feelings, take advantage of them. It's something different. You know how different it is? Do you know Nietzsche, the German philosopher, one of his key, you know, tainus against Judaism, he said, is it reverses the flow of nature. He says the flow of nature is survival of the fittest. The mightiest, the ubermensch, they should rule. They should have slaves. He said the Jewish culture came and it said, Almana leisana? Come on, she's there for the picking. That's the purpose of the weak people. We rule them. Klal Yisrael, Zaseyem Shainais. And what is Haman? Haman says, Zaseyem Shainais mikol am. They have a different culture. And the great Chiddush Rim said, the das of Klal Yisrael is to be Shainais mikol am, is to trumpet. Yes, we stand, hopefully, for a higher value system, a system of kindness. And most of the world stands in collision with that. Not the United States, a wonderful country, but the rest of the world. The argument, Zaseyem Shainais, is not an argument of 2,000 years ago. It's actually 2,400 years ago. It's very current. Here's a clip from 2 weeks ago in the United Nations. Listen to this 2-minute clip. Benjamin Netanyahu speaking, and see how relevant the nations of the world are, Zaseyem Shainais.
To shock you. Israel has a bright future at the UN. Now, I know that hearing that from me must surely come as a surprise, because year after year, I've stood at this very podium and slammed the UN for its obsessive bias against Israel. And the UN deserved every scathing word for the disgrace of the General Assembly that last year passed 20 resolutions against the Democratic State of Israel and a grand total of 3 resolutions against all the other countries on the planet. Israel 20, rest of the world 3. And what about the joke called the UN Human Rights Council, which each year condemns Israel more than all the countries of the world combined? As women are being systematically raped, murdered, sold into slavery across the world, which is the only country that the UN's Commission on Women chose to condemn this year? Yep, you guessed it, Israel. Israel. Israel, where women fly fighter jets, lead major corporations, head universities, preside twice over the Supreme Court, and have served as Speaker of the Knesset and Prime Minister. And this circus continues at UNESCO. UNESCO, the UN body charged with preserving world heritage. Now, this is hard to believe, but UNESCO just denied the 4,000-year connection between the Jewish people and its holiest site, the Temple Mount. That's just as absurd as denying the connection between the Great Wall of China and China. Ladies and gentlemen, the UN, begun as a moral force, has become a moral farce. So when it comes to Israel at the UN, you'd probably think, nothing will ever change, right? Well, think again.
Our culture is different. What is our das? It's a culture of tzedakah, and chesed, we have a difference. And you know that there was a report, you can Google this. Jews and Hindus lead the world. This was last week. 13% of their income goes to charity. A staggering amount compared to the rest of the world. It's closer to 5 or 6. More than double. Right? So what does Esther say? Esther's told by Mordechai to go and plead by Achashverosh for Klal Yisrael. And what does she say? Somebody comes to say Amelech, Dosei Lahamis. The culture is you're uninvited. Mordechai says, no, you have to go. So what does she say? Uvechein Avei El Amelech Asher Leikadav. I'm going to break the culture. I'm going to go with what I believe, what I believe to be right. Uvechein Avei El Amelech Asher Lo Kadav. Different us than the UN and the culture of the world. That is the Matthias of Klal Yisrael. That is in our DNA. You know, when Yimei HaDin come, it was supposed to be amazing things. Yiskadei Shimcha Malkeinu HaKol Masecha. Sanctify yourself. Who am I? Who am I to sanctify to? It's absurd. I know what I did this week. I know emotionally where I was, psychologically, physically. How am I going to say? Do you know what Klal Yisrael says? And Avudram says, we say, Uvechein. To say, we are a nation, we were always Mekadei Shem Shemayim. We did Ava. The whole Matzias is, she said, Avay El HaMelech Asher Loi Kadas. Our existence in this world, trying to set an example of kindness, of charity, of Loi Seder Pnei Dal, Loi Sisa Pnei Dal. Don't overlook the oppressed. Reach out your hand in the highest of times, the most difficult of times. So we, Klal Yisrael, who's a Metzias of Uvechein Avay El HaMelech Asher Loi Kadas, unfitting we came in front of, she came in front of the Melech. We say, Rabbi Nishom, you have to extend, if that's what you admire about us, we can come to you too, Shalei Kadas. I, David Lachinsky, could say, because of that Esther said, Uvechein Yiskadish, Uvechein Tein Pachtecha, Uvechein Tzadikim. So anybody who feels unprepared, Uvechein says, you know what, we don't have to be prepared, because our Metzias is, Avay El HaMelech HaShalei Kadas. I'd like to play a small clip of music where Shlomo Kalbach says a beautiful medrash over, where he talks about how Klal Yisrael was Evan Moasu Habayinim. We are the Evan Asher Moasu Habayinim, like Netanyahu spoke about, but Haisal Aresh Pina, one day, will be the crown of the world. Listen to this beautiful piece. We should all be Zaycha, us and all of Klal Yisrael, to a wonderful, wonderful Nitzach B'Yayim Hadid.
Very special holy one who would polish the stone to Stand by the holy wall, you see one stone has 100 corners, one has no corners, one has 10 corners, one has 16 corners, one is round, one is long, one is short. So there was one stone it misfit. The stone did not fit anywhere. And heaven must abide in this man, the builders of the only temple, to this stone away, his vice that stole. When the temple was finished and the roof of the Holy of Holies needed one more stone to complete the building, the crown of the building, there was no stone which could fit that opening until the builders remembered the castle is done, the castle is done.
I'm Rabbi Yitzchak.
Shalom.
David Lichtenstein, how are you?
How are you? It's been years.
Yes, from when we sat together in the Mirror Yeshiva. Ah, such special times. I still remember them. It was like it's many years ago, decades ago, but it's fresh in my mind like yesterday.
Uh-huh.
I still remember Tyra, you told me. I remember you clearing a shaila while putting butter on... why smearing butter, spreading butter on bread isn't mamachik. You had a whole vart on it, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, it's an honor, it's a real honor to have you on with us. So, let me ask you, Chaviz Das. You know, we live in a difficult world today. I don't know what it's like in Eretz Yisrael, but certainly in America. We are kids already, from a young age, unfortunately, are bombarded with a secular world that is very, very fray. And the question is, how do we teach children emuna? Do we teach them emuna pshuta? Do we try to teach them emuna more, you know, that with rayas, with proofs, more substantial? How much do we go into chakira? And we'd like to hear the Chaviz Das, your world-famous mechanech and dayan. We'd love to hear your dayas on this.
To begin with, as far as adults go, it's machlokes rishonim. We know the Rambam, the Chinuch, the Chayvus Halvavus, they're busy with chakira. So first, I think it's important to clarify what they mean by chakira. Chakira doesn't mean I start with a clean slate and I'm looking for truth and I want to really figure out, is there a Borei Olam? What's he like? That's not what they're talking about. They're talking about the mitzvah of Anoichi Hashem Elokecha, which means, we begin, there's a given here. There's a Mesorah Midor Dor. Our ancestors, they witnessed Yetzias Mitzrayim. They stood at the foot of Har Sinai and they were Nevi'im. They were Royim as HaKoilis. They heard the Rabbi Nishon speak. There's no question that that's the basis of Emunah for everybody. The Rambam holds that the mitzvah of Anochi Hashem Elokecha is mechayev us to go ahead and be mechazik our amuna by doing chakir. It's sort of an interesting muscle, perhaps. You know, back in high school math, we were busy deriving formulas. The formulas were given. We knew that they worked. The question was going through the logic behind it. It's a question of being mechazik your amuna by understanding that there's a clear logical basis for it also. But of course, it all began with Mesorah. It's not that a Yid is supposed to chalila be mistopic in his amuna, and, you know, let's be chaker and we'll find something. So that's the Rambam Shita, that you're supposed to do chakira. And the Yigav Shulti HaGiborim and Avodah Zarah is very much against it, because people's minds are not all strong enough to really be soivel it. Not everyone has the intelligence to differentiate between what's really logical and some word games. And you never know where someone's going to end up. They should be on the safe side. Stay with Emuna. What does Emuna mean? And once again, Emuna means the Messiah. Emuna means the Messiah. It all begins with the Messiah. There's no question that when we teach our children, like the Pasuk says in Parshas Bo, the purpose of the Moisim, the purpose of the Moisim was, among other things, Laman to Saper, for the sake of us being able to tell over what happened. Avlad, you have to bring up your kids knowing I was Makabalist from my father, from the Zeta, and you should know Klal Yisrael. We had an unbroken chain. There's a Shalshelis that goes all the way back to Yitzhak Mitzrayim. Never was there a door that didn't know that we came out of Mitzrayim. Never was a door that didn't know that there was a Maimon HaSinai where Hashem told us, Anoichi Hashem Elokecha, and gave Moshe Rabbeinu the Torah where he wrote Bereishis Bara. That everything has to start from there, no question. And in terms of younger children, it's obvious that it has to start, because what are you going to do? You just start talking chakira with your little kids? I mean, your kids have to know us as our Rabbeinu Shalom, more than that. In terms of bringing the Rabbeinu Shalom into their lives, that's an ikr. That's really an ikr. You know, a kid, when is he chayv and brachas, when is he yadei lamim avarach? That means at a young age, they have to understand there's a source, there's somebody that makes everything grow, there's somebody that provides for all of us. It's not just your parents need the Rabbeinu Shalom. They can't make anything on their own. And that a child knows to thank the Rabbeinu Shalom, and he learns to turn to the Rabbeinu Shalom. B'chol kareinu eilav. He learns to talk to the Rabbeinu Shalom. Kids have to see it bepoil. They have to see their parents talk about the Rabbeinu Shalom. I know sometimes some parents are a bit self-conscious. They feel a bit funny talking too much emuna. Your kids have to hear it. They have to hear emuna. You know, as they get older, they may start getting irritated if you overdo it. But when they're young, for sure, the Rabbeinu Shalom is part of the family. They have to feel that. You know, they have to know that every time you're going to do something, you talk to the Rabbeinu Shalom about it. Tefillah, it's an eager thing when they grow up. It's not just a matter of saying words and shaking back and forth. They have to learn to talk to the Rabbeinu Shalom. Another very important aspect of Emunah, since it's based on the Mesorah, is that it's based on the Masorah, but that means that it is reliant on the integrity of the people that are giving it over. I think one of the unarticulated proofs of our Masorah was the quality of people that Klal Yisrael has produced. You know, when kids saw, whether it's certainly Gdoili Yisrael, or even, you know, your average Feiner Fruma Yid, who's intelligent, who's critical, who's working on his Midas, Chesed, the fact that every Jewish community is built on Chesed. You know, they see there's really something special here, and they see that these people are for real. These are people I can trust. That's very important. So I don't want to take too much of a detour, but I think that something that you really have to be careful about is that if your kids start seeing hypocrisy, if your kids start seeing hypocrisy in you, they start seeing hypocrisy, Chalila, in Rebbeim, in people that they look up to, people that they respect, then they start having questions. They start having real questions about, can I trust this? You know, if this is the source to everything I believe in, can I trust this? Are these people for real, or do they have an agenda? I think one of the reasons why, you know, so many of the kids that go off of their Chalila to say it's all the same, it's everybody. I don't want to condemn Chalila, but so many of the kids that go off of there claimed that there was abuse. somebody hit them, somebody did something to them, whether it was a parent, whether it was a Rebbe, and they're bitter and they're angry, aside from all the psychological reasons, it's so difficult to be makabel and asoira from people that you don't trust. It's just such a difficult thing. Again, I think one of the greatest proofs of the amitius of Torah is G'dayli Yisroel, and it's not like every kid grows up with a G'dayli Yisroel next to him. It's the people that are mashgiach on them. I know, we knew it was Emes because, you know, we saw our Rebbeim. We knew these people are brilliant. These people are critical. If they believe in it, before I even start thinking, I know it's Emes.
Which is why I think that tearing down Rebbeim by parents is one of the worst imaginable things a parent
can do. Oh, it's terrible. You disagree with the Rebbe, that's your business. It's not your kid's business. It's not your kid's business. Chas v'shalom. A Rebbe says something that you don't think is appropriate for your child, either discuss it with the Rebbe. The most you can ever do is tell your child you're not ready for it yet. You know, the Rebbe tells the kid to keep something, or some chumra that he's really not up to, or something that you don't believe in the first place. You may say, you know, I don't think you're up to it, or you may say, you know, we don't do it in our house, that's not our minig, or something like that. That's the most you can get away with. But chas v'shalom, a critical word, certainly to bring kids up with cynicism of Rebbeim, a chalila.
I know, had a Rebbe, somebody who was a Rebbe, went to Rav Palm, Zohran Levarav Taravadas, he asked him, could he play basketball with the boys in his class? So Rav Palm looked at him and he said, are you sure you're going to win? Which I thought was very interesting. And I think if we don't respect our Rebbe, it creates, like you say, it's an element. How do I, if I don't look up to this person, why would I believe the Messiah that they're giving me?
Yeah. Yeah. Now, with regard to Hakira, that's not what it's based on. The question is, do you bring it up or not? I mean, my feeling is that when your kids are growing up, it's important that they hear something in the house, that they hear that there really are logical proofs. You know, it's very easy to go be mavatal everybody and say, you know, these scientists, they're full of negias, they're just looking to be matzdik, a corrupt way of life. Lamaisa, I mean, the fact is that everyone around them believes in evolution. You're not gonna address the issue at all. Your kids will one day inevitably be exposed to it. And they have to know how to deal with it. Remember, I once heard from Ben Zion Brooks, the friend of Lavrocha. He said that they asked the Alta from Navarduk, why is it that the Chavis Halvavis, he goes through all the sfeikis that the Yetzirah can make in your emunah. He says, why did the Chavis Halvavis do it? So the Alta answered, at one point or another in your life, you're going to hear these sfeikis from somebody. It's better that you hear it first from the Chavis Halvavis. I remember in our high school, when they put evolution into the syllabus, it was in the biology syllabus in New York. So I remember by us, they had them teach it. I mean, there were a lot of parents that were very much against it. We were petrified. They're going to shake the foundations of our moon. I don't know what they're going to do here. Anyway, you know, we felt very, very uneasy feelings about them allowing us to hear this stuff. So the first day, you know, they started with evolution and, you know, the teacher reads it from the book and talks about there was this primordial soup and it was struck by lightning and van der Waals forces and, what do you know, the proteins came together and life was formed. And one of the guys, you know, this is 10th grade, one of the guys raises his hand and asks, you know, where'd the soup come from? And the teacher stops and says, I don't know, it doesn't say. And that was it. We didn't hear anything else. You know, the rest of it was Purim Torah. You know, basically, it's important, you know, it's so important that your kids, as they're growing up, understand that evolution does not deal with where everything came from.
I'll tell you a story. I was at a convention, this is going back many years ago, and Stephen Hawking was there. And I asked him,
what kind of convention was this?
It was a telephony. It was an internet telephony convention. And a lot of scientists. And I said, can I ask you a question? So he said, yes. I said, I'd like to ask you a question that a a medieval Jewish philosopher called Bachya ibn Pakuda asked 1,000 years ago. He asked, if the world created itself, it could only have created itself in one of two ways. Either it created itself before it existed, or it created itself after it existed. Both of which are obviously absurd. I said, to which of these two possibilities do you opine? And he looked at me and he responded. He said, I don't respond to what happened. I don't know where the Big Bang came from. I only deal with post Big Bang.
Okay.
Exactly.
Okay. Yeah, so basically, I mean, I think it's so important for a kid growing up to understand that, you know, the whole world is into this, and they don't even realize that it's not addressing the issue of where did everything come from. It's a very important thing. Now, you're going to say you're going to get your kids into a whole discussion. I'm not talking about making a whole intellectual thing. I'm not even talking about presenting it in a way that you're going to give evolution too much credibility, as people are afraid of. Just the idea of mentioning something that's so simple and could really diffuse so much of the stuff that your kids can end up being exposed to. Because everyone out there believes that the alternative to creation is evolution. And the truth of the matter is that one has nothing to do with the other. They're just dealing with all the interim steps, you know, what happened between Bereshis Bara and the formation of everything we've got. Good, so you never answer the question. If you don't agree that there's a Bari Olam, so your evolution doesn't start either. You do believe in a Bari Olam, so how do you know this is the way he did it?
When kids are, let's say, you have college kids or irreligious kids, how do you deal with them at that age or in that situation?
The very first thing is you have to know where they're coming from. You have to know, are you dealing with kids that are having real problems, you know, that they've worked it out logically and they're really dealing with it and they have an intellectual problem, then you have to address it intellectually. If they're responding emotionally to something or they're just going with the flow, then it's important that you deal with that.
Let's say I have a neighbor, sadly, their kid went to an Ivy League school and they came back raging atheist. I wouldn't even say agnostic, atheist. I think it goes beyond the purview of this show to respond, but how would you deal with that? Like, give us some type of general direction.
Once again, you have to know where he's coming from. If he really works through things logically and you feel that he's been exposed to, you know, there are some people in some of these Ivy League schools that have put together a collection of information and misinformation both, and take pride in the fact that they get Orthodox Jews to become agnostics. You know, if it's somebody that's been exposed to that and you need to set him straight, the best thing is that you refer him to people that deal with this, people that know what they have heard. You know, they know what kids like this have been exposed to, so that you can address their issues. If it's just a matter of having gone with the flow, if it's a matter of something emotional, then you have to address that, and that's something that's a lot more a matter of finding out what's bothering him. You know, what's the underlying thing that's bothering him, and dealing with it. You know, sometimes it's that he sort of looks at our society as being backward, and I think it's important that he understand that there was something very profound about the woodchoppers in the shtetl, who, you know, look backwards and in the days of the Haskalah, who were embarrassed of the state of Kal Yisrael, they didn't realize that with all of the poverty and the lack of sophistication when it came to Gashmias, there was a lot of sophistication in terms of thought. You know, appreciating that you know, maybe the people he's speaking to don't have the vocabulary, but they know their stuff, and they're good and they're honest. And it's something he has to realize. So we had a very interesting situation. I remember when I was at Aish, there was somebody that came, he spent some time in Aish, then disappeared, and then came back sometime later. And he said he decided to return. Where were you? So he said that, you know, I spent some time here, The classes were above me. You were taught philosophy, and I'm not a philosopher. I'm not much of a thinker. Then I went to a different place, a different stream of Judaism, and I listened to their classes. And he said, to be honest, I couldn't tell who's right because I didn't understand what either of you said. So I decided I'm going to have to go by the quality of the people. And I trust you more than I trust them. I saw more integrity here than I saw there. I think a very important thing, I mentioned this before with regard to parents, I think a very important thing is that a lot of the kids are reacting to what they see as hypocrisy within the community. And it's important to point out to them that, yeah, our societies are far from perfect. There's a lot more good going on in our society than anywhere else. There's a lot more integrity despite it all. There's still a lot more integrity. There's more of a concern for Emes. There are more people that are willing to be Maidal Emes on our side than anywhere else. That we don't play word games, that people mean it, that the fact that not everyone can articulate their Amun, it doesn't mean that it's not based on anything. They have to appreciate that, you know, your average Yid has been exposed to so much since he grew up. He has confidence. You know, if only to say that if the Vilna Gaon could have believed in it, then it must be Emes. And once again, seeing his Rebbeim and seeing big people, I think it's very important to point that out to somebody. You know, if he's been just schlepped in with the flow by somebody who sounds very sophisticated and has put things together, you know, ask, do you really see the kind of integrity in him that you see in bigger people among us? You know, and of course you're going to have to explain that whatever hypocrisy or whatever inconsistencies there are within our community, that's not what the community is made of. They're the exception. They're not the rule. They're not the norm. There are too many of them, but they're not the norm. That's not what our society is based on. I think it's very important for kids to see that. And there are times that you really have to tell that to them.
Hundreds of people to hear you. It's really a tremendous covet, and we'd be most appreciative if we can get you on at another occasion.
It's great talking to you again. Chazak ve'amatz.
Good kibenshtia.
A good kibenshtia.
Tol tov.
We have the honor of having with us on the phone Rabbi David Saperman, who's the founder and director of the Ani Mamin Foundation. Welcome, Rabbi Saperman.
Thank you.
Can you tell our listeners, many of whom are, you know, sort of maybe not so knowledgeable about what Ani Mamin does, what your organization's focus is?
Certainly. It'd be my honor. The Ani Mamin Foundation is there to be mechazik emuna in a generation where emuna has become very weak.
Okay. Oh, go ahead.
Yeah. There are two types of emuna. There's emunas ha-seichel and kabbalas ovos. Kabbalas ovos means what we learned in the Masorah. We heard it from our Rebbeim. We heard it from our parents. We learned it from the tzaddikim and the chachamim from earlier generations. That's called kabbalas ovos. It's the Masorah. But the emunas ha-seichel.
Can I ask you, before you talk about Emunah Sasechel, could you tell us a little bit about your background, your chinuch experience, etc., what inspired you to get involved with Ani Mamin, to create Ani Mamin?
Certainly. I am a Talmud of Philadelphia, Panovich, and Lakewood. I've been in chinuch, Baruch Hashem, for 49 years. I started as a cheder melamed in Lakewood, and I was the mashgiach ruchni Baruch Simcha Wasserman in Los Angeles, and I've taught in many different places, many different ages. I taught younger children. I taught bochrim for about 15 years of my life. I taught 14-year-old bochrim. I've taught seminary. I've taught girls' high school.
Did you ever meet Reb Aaron, or is that before you?
I met Reb Aaron, I went to him personally with a personal issue, and he's the one who advised me to remain in learning, which I did upon his advice, and the meeting with Reb Aaron was a very, very exhilarating experience that I can never forget.
So tell us, Rabbi Saperman, you have certainly a lot of credentials, very qualified, we would all agree to that. Tell us, You spoke about what Amunas Avis is. What is Amunas HaSeichel?
Amunas HaSeichel means the chelik of Amunah that we can understand with our own mind. We don't need to believe it. We can see it with our own mind. Like we see from Nifloes HaBere, we see that there's a creator to the universe, which is, for someone who's objective, it's incontrovertible. Maimed HaSinai can be traced back to the first day, and this is brought in Svarim, this is the Chavis HaLavavos, in Shar HaPchina, and the Ramban in Chumash tells us the combination of two factors. Number one, that the entire Klal Yisrael witnessed Har Sinai themselves, and that they passed it down in an unbroken chain, and the children do not entertain the thought that the entire collective body of parents is telling them a lie. So therefore, it is to us as if we saw it all with our own eyes. This is Miderech HaSeichel. You don't need Emunah for this. As a matter of fact...
Rabbi Saperman, there was a Sefer recently published by a Rabbi Schmelzer from Muncie, where he made a very powerful argument. He brought many Rishonim, etc., that we should not enter into the world of Emunah HaSeichel, because it's sort of opening up Pandora's box. And once we start having to bring Raya's, well, if there's a Raya like this, there may be a Raya Fakeret, etc. How would you respond to that?
Okay, I don't feel it's my place to speak against someone else's Sefer. However, I will tell you that there are many Talmidei Chachamim who have reviewed that Sefer, and that there is a critique, a serious critique, that's going to be published, because that is not possible. It is not possible for anyone to denigrate Emunas HaSeichel. This is Mamish the Messiah of Klal Yisrael, and it's just not possible. And so this is going to be a critique is going to be published soon. But the important thing is that this is not an animamen issue. It's a question.
I understand that, but what do you think of the question? In other words,
There is no question. The Aviezri Rav Shach Zatzal brings from he asked the Priskerov, he says, May Ozum, he wondered, what do you need Emunah for when the Seichel tells you to believe? He asked the Priskerov. So the Priskerov said he heard from his father that is absolutely true, except that there are some issues, some things that we cannot understand with our Seichel. Where Yediyah stops, that's where Emunah starts. Rav Avigdor Miller, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, all his life spoke about substantiating the Emunah with Seichel.
So do you have, in Animamen, do you work with any Rishonim, Achronim that support the position of Emunah?
We only work with traditional sources. We don't do anything new whatsoever. Nothing. We only work with traditional sources. We teach, if I go to a school, or if my shutef, Pinchas Young, is a very famous darshan who lives in Muncie, who speaks for Animam, and if one of us goes to a school, we will usually tell the children the Hakdama to the Sefer HaKinuch, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted to give the Torah in front of Shishim Riboy, 600,000 men, besides women and children, and with the experience of Nevuah, which there can be no doubt about, and then it was passed down in an unbroken chain, and therefore we have in our hands eyewitness testimony without any dreams of it at all.
So Rabbi Saperman, do you feel that the yeshivas are doing an adequate job of teaching Emunah to our children?
Let me tell you, I started this because I felt that Emunah had fallen off the agenda, the radar. It wasn't on the radar. So because it was taken for granted for so long. The truth is that this Emunah should really be coming from the homes. But the Klal Yisrael has been through so many travails in the last century, and it's not always given over in the homes, and it was not in the traditional chinuch system. The Torah Umasora, I think it was before Pesach, began an initiative which is called the Amunos Kabbalelos. And they had an online presentation with another Minsky Rebbe Shlita spoke, and he basically said everything that Ani Maamon has been saying for the last 7 years. He said that the Amuna needs to be taught, and our Machankim have not been doing it. And the truth is that many of them do not know how to do it because they had no training in it. And we have to renew this because the children do have questions and they do have to be addressed and they do have to be answered. And in particular, we have to address three issues. Metzius HaBeirei, Maimed HaSinai and Yetzias Mitzrayim, and Teresh Baal Peh. And it happens to be that if I had written the script, that's exactly what I would have written, because that's exactly what we have been saying for the last 7 years.
Rabbi Saperman, why would you limit it to yeshiva? And I could say honestly, in yeshiva, I don't think 1% of the time or a fraction of that was dedicated to talking about Emunah. But I can't think of the last time I went into a shul and heard a rav speak about Emunah. Like, why would we limit it
we
to
don't
yeshivas?
Limit it. We don't limit it to yeshivas. We don't limit it to yeshivas. We speak for parents. As a matter of fact, just 3 weeks ago, we made a video which should soon be released was a session for parents on how to implant emuna and passion in Yiddishkeit in the home. We do speak publicly for parents, and we've spoken in many, many different cities, in Baltimore, in Los Angeles, in Muncie, in many different places. We don't limit it to yeshivas, except that the yeshivas, it's like a captive audience. If the yeshiva lets you in, it's easier because you have a captive audience.
So do most yeshivas let you in? Like, what's your success rate?
The yeshivas are just beginning to open their doors. You know, yeshivas are very reticent to make any changes, to do anything that they haven't done before, which is understandable. That's a necessary caution because we cannot let in every innovation. Nevertheless, the innovations that are important should be allowed in. And the yeshivas are beginning to open the doors.
And you have Haskamis? Who is Haskamis? Who are your supporters?
Rabbi Avraham Chaim Levine Shlita, the Rosh Yeshiva of Tel Chicago, is a very supportive. He actually said publicly at the Torah Masorah Convention a few years ago, he said that the yeshivas and the schools, the chadorim, they're overloaded with curriculum, but there's one curriculum that we dare not skip, and that is the curriculum of Emuna. And he cited in particular our materials and by name. And he has been very, very supportive. As a matter of fact, I just spoke 2 weeks ago in the yeshiva of a Talmud Muvak of his. And he said he didn't have to ask about me because he spoke to his Rebbe. And the Rebbe said, you know, he's all behind it. Reb Shmuel Kamenetsky Shlita is firmly behind us. Reb Shlomo Miller, Rosh Kohel from Toronto, is firmly behind us, and Abar Feldman is very, very supportive, and these people have all given me written haskamas.
How do the children, when you get up in front of a class, how do they, curious, do they tune in, do you see them, interest, like how do children respond when you speak about Emunah?
Can I read you a letter that I received today?
Absolutely.
Hold on. This letter, I spoke in Yeshiva Shari Torah 2 weeks ago in Muncie.
That's in Far Rockaway.
That Yeshiva Shari Torah is in Muncie. Maybe there's such a yeshiva in Far Rockaway, but this one is in Muncie. And it's a high school. It used to be Rabbi Wine's yeshiva and Rabbi Wormont.
I know the yeshiva.
I told them that I need 2 hours. So when the Bachrim heard that I'm going to speak for 2 hours, there was almost a mutiny. 2 hours? You expect us to sit for 2 hours? I said that I'm only going to speak for a small chelik of the time, and the rest of the time I'm going to open it up to their questions, which is what I did.
Oh, can you read the letter, Rabbi Zeb? I'm
looking for the letter that the Bachram were very concerned about sitting for too long, and yet when it came time to break it up, they were complaining because they were very engaged. They had their questions that they wanted answers to, and Baruch Hashem, they were getting answers.
And what were some of the questions they asked?
The questions are the same all over. I don't remember particularly which questions they asked.
What are some of the more challenging or popular questions?
The questions, there's about 25 questions that get asked over and over again, no matter where we go. And this includes internationally, my Shutta for Pinchas Yom in Melbourne. How do we know there's HaKadosh Baruch Hu? How do we know that Hashem really gave us the Torah? How do we know that we are right? After all, I received a written question from a seventh grader in Toronto. How do we know we are 0.02% of the world's population? 99.98% says we're wrong. What makes us think we're right? Yeah. Maybe the Christians are right. Maybe the Muslims are right. And in order, and it
give us
doesn't
some more.
Take,
give us some more questions that you're in.
Why is it that, how can it be that there's Bechira when HaKadosh Baruch Hu knows in advance?
Do you get questions about evolution?
All the time.
You get questions about the age of the universe?
I get questions about these things all the time. This is part of the thing, and the reason for that is because these things are actually on their minds. We may think that they're sheltered, but they're not nearly as sheltered as we think. I do teach Yisraelis Ramun in a yeshiva, in a cheder called the Toronto Cheder, once a week to the 8th grade. I've been doing it for the last 7 years, Baruch Hashem, with great hatzlacha. And after Pesach, I spoke to the boys for the first time. I had spoken to them about Nefilos HaBeirei many times, but I spoke to them about evolution. And the best bacher in the class, whose father is a chashav ben Torah, who's every night in learning in Beis Medrash. And the boy is with him in the Beis Medrash also learning. And the bacher is a takshit avtsuyin bakril mikrel kril. The bacher came over to me after, he says, but don't they have fossils that show that man evolved from a monkey? So I learned from here that even a bacher who's the top could have these doubts because the world is full of these doubts. So I speak about it, and Baruch Hashem, and in the book that I published recently, Amuna, a refresher course, I did devote a chapter to this, by the suggestion of Rav Aaron Feldman, Shlita, the Rosh Yeshiva of Baltimore. When we were there a few years ago, he said, it is time that the Yeshiva high schools began teaching the refutation of Amuna. And so I worked through this chapter with somebody who's a Mumcha Gadol, a really great expert on this subject, a big Talmud Chacham, also a professor in university, and I wrote this chapter, and Baruch Hashem, I think it helps a lot of people.
So is it fair to say, Rabbi Zeberman, that in a generation where the children know much more than they ever knew at a much younger age, your shita is let's expose them to the answers quickly before they run around with these questions festering and festering, afraid to ask, and one day they just explode?
Absolutely. 7 years ago, when we gave our very first public presentation to a large, we spoke in the Yeshiva of Spring Valley in Muncie, Rabbi Young and I. So I got a phone message from Rabbi Shmuel Kamenetsky after the drosha. He said, that does it. I heard it was great. You should go speak everywhere. I called him back. I got a haskama from him also that week. So I called him back, and I said, Rosh Yeshiva, I learned him to a dog. I said, Rosh Yeshiva, the haskama is very precious to me, but I need to tell the Rosh Yeshiva what our plan is. We want to give the students a forum to air their questions and get answers. Is that correct? He said, absolutely. I have in my hand a an email from the Menahel of the Beis Yaakov in Johannesburg. And he said to me that he asked Rav Matisyahu Solomon Shlita if the girls are allowed to ask their Amunah questions publicly, or must we fear that they will be that the ones that don't have questions will be harmed?
And that's a very powerful question. That was asked Rabbi Solomon, you say, yeah?
This is Rabbi Solomon.
Powerful
and he
question.
answered, they can ask because all the girls have questions, they're just too embarrassed to ask. Now, this question was also sent, I sent a written Shaila with a very big Talmud Chacham, who, when he goes to Eretz Yisrael, visits Reb Chaim Kanievsky Shlita. This was exactly the Shaila. May we allow them to ask their questions publicly, or must we be afraid that the others will be harmed? The answer was, we do not have to fear that the others will be harmed. He asked him, are you willing to give it b'ksav? And he said, there's no necessity for a ksav, it's cheaper. So this is the psak that we follow, and we feel very confident. Those people that are in the trenches know that this is true. They know that the kids are exposed to much more than we think. And not only that, I once had an experience. I spoke for a seventh grade, and everybody was happy. The kids were happy, the rebbeim were happy, the parents were happy, the regards from the parents. Everybody was happy except for one mother, because she had a naive young son, and it was the first time that he ever heard any issues, and he got very taken aback by it. So his father called. The only problem was that his father was the menahel of the school, so it was a little bit of a problem. So I said to him, bring the boy to me, and you come too. I sat with the boy for 45 minutes, and the boy went home and had the campus. So I said to the father, what would you prefer, that he becomes exposed to this now in a controlled environment when we can make sure that he gets the answers and walks away happy, or that he gets exposed to it when he's 16 or 17 from a newspaper or a magazine and has no access to get the answers or may not ask and makes his own conclusions? What would you prefer?
You know, Rabbi.
Anyone who's in the trenches knows if we don't engage them and see what's on their minds, we don't know what they're thinking, we don't know what their questions are, what their doubts are, we don't know what they're confident with, we don't know what they're not confident with, we don't know. But when you take them into a room, which we've done so many times, and you let them ask their questions, you discover what's on their mind, and you also discover that it's not difficult to answer their questions. That's what you find out.
So, Rabbi,
my shutter, yes.
Go ahead. I'm sorry. Continue.
My shutter, Rabbi Young, was in London this summer. He's been called back to this London seminary every summer for the last 3 years, and he has a simcha in London soon, and he's going to be speaking there again. Can I read you the letter that the girls wrote? The girls themselves wrote.
I would love to hear them.
Look, Rabbi Young, this is not just a regular thank you card, because how can we aptly use mere words to express our gratitude? The seminar you gave us changed our entire perspective. Thank you for taking the time to travel all the way in order to teach us these basic yesodos. Even as from Beis Yaakov girls, questions can arise, and if not answered, they turn into doubts, chas v'shalom. So we really thank you for giving us rock-solid proof, real amunah, and an ability to navigate this tough world with real insight and our heads held high, knowing with full amunah that what we are doing is right, even when everything seems confusing.
So, Rabbi Tapperman, if we have many listeners, if people want to get in touch with you to either speak at this school, to speak at a yeshiva, to speak at a shul, to speak, etc., how would they reach you?
Okay, they can call our office at 845-418-2122, or they can email us at info@animamin.org, or they can call me personally at 416-823-9241.
Well, Rabbi Tapperman, it's been an honor. I think that speaking about Emunah is something that our yeshivas and schools and shuls and maybe as parents and as husbands, as wives, we don't do enough of. And I want to thank you very much on behalf of all the people who are nene from you for the wonderful work that you do.
Thank you very much. It's been an honor to be interviewed by you.
Kol tov, all the best.
Kol tov.